absorption of photons. Okay. So you've heard the phrase Schrodinger's equation bandied about every once in a while. So how many of you would like to see a little more detail about Schrodinger's equation and how you actually get Schrodinger's equation and what it means? Do I have a majority?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a majority. Okay, so this, I have to warn you, this will involve a little bit of mathematics. And it'll involve taking derivatives. Okay, it'll involve complex waves and taking derivatives. But even if you don't understand the details of all of that stuff, if you can get at least the gist of the idea, that'll be great. Okay, so let's see if we can do this. So I wrote down a complex wave. So when we say, okay, a particle is moving to the right with some momentum plus p, how is that described quantum mechanically? Well, it has a real part and an imaginary part. So this is the real axis, this is the imaginary axis, and it's cosine in the real, then it's sine in the imaginary, et cetera, et cetera. And the wave is actually a complex exponential. That looks like that. Okay? And where this is the physical momentum of the particle, that's the physical energy, and that's Planck's constant. Okay, so this describes this complex wave pattern, that spiral wave. As time goes on, that pattern moves to the right. Okay, so now the idea is that that wave is going to satisfy some kind of an equation, a wave equation. How many of you have ever seen any kind of a wave equation? Okay, so just about a quarter of you have seen a wave equation. Okay, so a wave equation is something that involves figuring out how something changes with time, as well as how quickly something changes with time, and how quickly it changes over distance. So it involves derivatives. Okay, so a wave equation, Schrodinger's wave equation, is going to involve taking derivatives of this function, of this wave. Okay, so let me just remind you about how to differentiate an exponential. Okay, so if you have e to the x, so Stefan talked a little bit about this at the beginning. If I take the derivative of that thing, let me use this notation. It'll be better later on. So if I have e to the x, and I differentiate that with respect to x, let's start with a simpler example. So Stefan told you this one, right? If I differentiate x to the n, what do I get? Nx to the n minus 1. Okay, if I differentiate, say, e to the x, what do I get?
E
to the x. If I differentiate, say, sine x,
cosine.
I get cosine. If I differentiate cosine x, negative sine. Okay, so we know how to differentiate things, okay, simple functions like this. Okay, now, what if I take, instead of the derivative with respect to x of e to the x, what if I take d by dx of e to the some number alpha? So alpha is just some number. It could be 5 or 7 or negative 2, or it could be even be complex. What is the derivative of this with respect to x? Alpha e to the alpha x. Okay, one easy way to see this is I could multiply and divide by alpha both sides of this. Okay, and this alpha I could bring here. So I'm differentiating not with respect to x, but with respect to alpha x. Okay, so now this looks like alpha times d by d some other variable y e to the y. We already know that the derivative of e to the y with respect to y is just e to the y. And then we have this extra constant alpha up front. Okay, and then y, we said, was equal to alpha times x. Okay? I don't want you to, if you don't understand that, it's not a big deal. Okay, all I want you to see is that if I put a derivative in front of, so let me just write it down up here. Okay, so even if you don't understand where that comes from, that's just a rule to just keep in mind. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to take derivatives of that complex wave up there, which has disappeared from view. Okay, can you turn it off? Okay, so let's put that over here, and let's move over here. Okay, so what if I take the derivative with respect to time outside? What am I going to get? So this is my wave psi, and I take the derivative of this with respect to time. Is it obvious what I'm going to get? Yeah.
Question. Because they are there's time and position, shouldn't you instead use the d, the little curly thing for partial derivative?
Yeah, that's right. So these should actually be partial derivatives. Actually, here it's fine, but here it should be partial derivatives. Okay? But I don't want to confuse everyone, so let's just use just this. It doesn't really matter. Okay, so we're differentiating with respect to t, holding x constant. Okay, so does someone have some sense of what that might be? Okay, let's start with differentiating with respect to x. Someone have a sense of what that might be? Yeah.
All right, so I, p over h bar times 2, that jump.
Yes. So one way to maybe simplify this is I know that e to the a times e to the b is what? Okay, so what I have here is e to the sum of two terms here, well, actually a difference. Okay, I can write that as a product. I can write that as e to the I over h bar px times e to the minus I over h bar dt. Okay, so when I differentiate this thing with respect to x, it means hold t constant. So this is just a constant. Okay, so now I'm just differentiating this guy and multiplying by that constant. And what do I get? This whole thing can be thought of as just some constant alpha. So I have an e to the alpha x. I differentiate with respect to x. I pull down that alpha. So what I get is just I just get I over h bar p. I just pull that alpha down times the original function. Okay. Are you okay with that? I realize that this is a bit of a stretch here. Okay, but I just want you to see that Schrodinger's equation is actually very, very simple. The concept behind it is very, very simple and natural. Okay? So, suppose we're okay with that, which we're not quite, but let's just move on here so that we can do some other stuff. But this is really cool. I think this is a very important idea. What if I differentiate again? Okay, so what does that mean? That means take the derivative with respect to x of the derivative with respect to x of psi. We already know what the derivative of psi is with respect to x is this thing. Okay, so it means take the derivative again of that same thing. What am I going to get? I'm going to get what? So I'm going to get I over h bar p, that's just a constant out front, times the derivative of psi with respect to x. But we already know what that is. That's I over h bar p times psi. So I get that thing squared times psi. What is that equal to? What happens to the I squared? So it becomes negative p squared over h bar squared times psi. Okay. What if I take the derivative of psi with respect to t, holding x constant? So now I go back to this thing and I say, okay, I don't care about x, this is just a constant. I'm differentiating this thing with respect to that variable. So it's e to the some number t. I'm differentiating with respect to t, what am I going to get? Right, I'm going to get minus I over h bar times e times the original function. Okay? So, now let's do just a tiny bit of algebra, and we will get Schrodinger's equation. Okay, and so what we will do is we will say, let's consider minus IH bar times d by dt of psi. What is that equal to? We know what this is. It's right there. What if I multiply by minus IH bar? What do I get? Okay, so we have that. Let's consider also negative h bar squared over 2m times the second derivative of psi with respect to x. So we already know what that second derivative is. What if we multiply by negative h bar squared over 2m? What do we get? Okay. In Newtonian mechanics, energy is kinetic energy plus potential energy.
Why are we just multiplying by IH and h squared over 2m? Like, where are those coming from?
Why are we doing that? Okay, you'll see presently. So energy in the Newtonian universe is just kinetic plus potential. Okay. In this case, we're dealing with a free particle. We're dealing with a particle just moving along the x-axis without encountering any forces or anything. So there's no potential. That's just zero. The energy is kinetic. How do I express the kinetic energy in terms of the momentum? Okay. So for the situation we're describing, E is just p squared over 2m. So this is just equal to that. So E is p squared over 2m. So E times psi is the same as p squared over 2m times psi, no matter what psi is. Okay. So this equals this. Do you see that? Okay, that means this equals this. Okay, so that's Schrodinger's equation. It says that IH bar times the time derivative of my wave function is minus h bar squared over 2m times the second derivative with respect to the spatial coordinate, with respect to x, of psi. And if there's a non-zero potential energy here, just say a function of x or something, like we have when the ball is rolling around in the bowl like this, there's a potential energy which is proportional to x squared. Okay, then we just add this v. This just becomes v times psi. And this is Schrodinger's equation. Okay, so any particle in any situation, in any potential energy situation, satisfies that equation. And we just verified that for a free particle, but you can also verify that for the particle bound to the box. It also satisfies, it also works for, of course, these guys here. So these guys here, if you look at any one of these, say this guy, okay, this guy over here, that's some wave. That's some function of x, y, z, and time. So at any instant of time, t, it's some complex number at every point in space. It's a function like this. And if I were to plug that function into this equation, if I add also d squared, dy squared, t squared, dz squared, it will satisfy, that wave will satisfy that equation.
Why did you put the potential energy equal to zero?
The potential energy was zero in our example because we just had a free particle. So it wasn't bound by any forces or anything. So there's it's not in a potential energy of any kind. So that's it. So that's essentially a physical intuition into Schrodinger's equation. And notice that Schrodinger's equation is based on the idea that energy is just p squared over 2m. In reality, we know that this is true. Okay, in a relativistic universe, if we take into account that the universe has a speed limit, then the relationship between energy and momentum is a little bit more complicated. It looks like this. Okay, and one of the exercises at the very beginning of this camp, you were asked to show, that this equation here reduces to this equation. It's so if you take the square root of both sides, and treat C as very, very large, then it becomes energy is approximately p squared over 2m plus mc squared. Okay, so this is saying that the energy, when the particle is at rest, the energy is just mc squared, just the rest energy. And when it's in motion with some non-zero momentum, you add to that energy some kinetic energy. Okay? But the real relationship between momentum and energy is this relationship here. Okay, so basically, Schrodinger's equation is based on non-relativistic Newtonian mechanics. Okay? And then people like Klein-Gordon and Dirac try to write a similar kind of equation, wave equation, based upon this formula. And when you do that, you find a remarkable thing happens. Let me just say what it is, and then we'll quit because we don't want to spend all day on this. Okay, so what happens is really remarkable. You'll notice that this energy, this is squared, right? So when you take the square root, there's two possible signs. Okay, and those two possible signs are intimately connected with. Let me just say what it is. If you take the square root of this and you work it out, et cetera, it's a complicated thing. You find that psi. Let me just give you a little bit of progression here. We started out thinking of the wave function as real waves, cosine and sine. We just discovered that doesn't work. We have to extend to complex numbers. Okay, so psi goes from a real number to a real number plus I, like has a real and imaginary part. Okay, so it has two parts. Okay, and then it turns out that in order to satisfy this equation, combining quantum ideas with relativity ideas and taking the square root here, it turns out that the kind of object that you have to deal with is not just a complex number, but four complex numbers. So psi becomes four complex numbers, psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, and psi 4. Okay? So you have to expand. So we used to expand it from just real to complex, and then you make another expansion to four complex numbers at any point in space and time. Okay? And these two are associated with spin. Yeah. Yep. These are associated with spin. This is the probability of finding an electron at some location spin up. This is the probability amplitude of finding the electron at that same location but spin down. There's two numbers, spin up and spin down. Probabilities for spin up and spin down. Okay. And what do you think these are? Antimatter. That's right. Okay, so this is matter, and this is antimatter. Okay, so in trying to combine quantum with relativity, Dirac was the guy who did this. Dirac discovered that you needed four complex numbers, and he tried to make heads or tails of this, and he interpreted this as spin, these two as spin, but matter and antimatter. So a natural prediction, so spin and antimatter, they're natural consequences. They're intimately connected with this special relativistic universe that Einstein had discovered. Okay, so, enough said on that. Okay, so is that cool? Yeah.
That's from special relativity, right?
Yeah.
So
that's the idea now, is to combine. So if, I mean, this is the remarkable thing. If you combine quantum ideas with just special relativity, all kinds of things happen,
right,
including spin and antimatter.
Is that in the standard model?
Yeah, and this mathematics led to the standard model. So basically, all of the quarks, so the quarks and the leptons are described by